So, welcome to the Quantum Street podcast. Today with us is Hester Peirce, Commissioner of the Security and Exchange Commission. She was appointed by President Trump in 2018 and has done so much important regulatory work for the US. I feel really grateful for the opportunity to be able to speak and interview today. We'll be speaking today about Commissioner Peirce's experience as a public servant at the SEC. She is a regulatory sector of government, and we'll discuss how current events and innovation are shaping her decisions and regulatory frameworks. So we'll delve into AI, crypto, public policy, and so many other more interesting facts about Commissioner Peirce's role at the SEC. Again, thank you so much for coming.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be on Quantum Street, and I need to start with a couple disclaimers. One is that my views are my own views as a commissioner, not necessarily those of the SEC or my fellow commissioners. And second, as a government regulator, I'm not a proponent of any asset. I think people should make their own choices.
Understood. So I wanted to start with your background. So where did you grow up, your college experience, what ultimately led you to become a commissioner at the SEC, and how you're enjoying that role right now?
Well, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and went to Case Western Reserve, where I was a student of, among others, Professor Heschel, who I think you go to a school named after her father. So we have a connection there. And then I went to law school in Connecticut, and then found my way to DC and never left. And so because I studied economics as an undergrad, I ended up being able also to mix the two, law and economics, in being in the securities regulatory area. It was a natural fit. And so that's where I've spent most of my career, thinking about securities regulation and financial regulation more generally.
So what made you inclined to get a JD? Was there something specific that you wanted to
pursue? Oh, I don't think I planned it so well. I actually thought about getting a PhD in economics and applied to both grad school and law school, but ended up picking the one that involved less math, to be honest with you.
That's a very fair reason to get into that field. So I want to switch to more regulatory aspects of your role at the SEC. So we're in a technological revolution with AI. What excites you most about it, would you say? And what concerns you about it? What recent discussions have you had at the SEC about this? Let me know your thoughts.
Sure. I mean, when I think about technology and what it's good for, things can be used for good or bad, right? But the goal is to have more people living lives where they are more fulfilling and more prosperous lives, right? So technology can help us to do those things. They can help to improve people's standard of living. It can help to make their lives easier and more pleasant. And so that's sort of how I think about the value that technology can play. Obviously, we regulate markets that are very technologically advanced. And when a tool like AI comes along, it certainly gets used by the financial industry. It has been used by the financial industry for many years, but now we have new versions of AI, new iterations of it that I think will be even more transformative. And one area I can think of is AI will help to make it easier for people to get access to financial advice, because you can get financial advice that is provided by a human. You can get financial advice that's provided by a human using technology to make it more bespoke, more fitting for the person who's getting the advice, and cheaper. And so I'm hoping that more people will find the help they need to invest in the capital markets and to build nest eggs for themselves and for their children.
Do you see any risks from a regulatory perspective with more agentic autonomous models trading in the market? What kinds of ethical risks do you see in that?
Well, and again, I'm going to push back here a little bit, because I think ethics, you know, rules are one thing, and people should comply with the rules. You know, we've set up the SEC. The Congress has put in place the securities laws, and so that is people have to comply with those. But people also need to have their own ethical compass, their own moral compass with which they come to the marketplace, with which they approach all aspects of their lives. And so you shouldn't be assessing the ethics or morality of something just by looking at what the law is. You have to make a decision about what is right and wrong that's sort of independent from you know, no one else makes those decisions for you. Even lawmakers who are really I and my colleagues at the SEC were trying to make rules that make sense, but we also really would hope that people would make their own decisions not to do things that are unethical. So in terms of agentic AI, I mean, again, AI agents can be an efficient tool to help us live our lives better. But we obviously don't want them to be doing things that are illegal or immoral. And so I think the people who are designing them ought to be thinking about those kinds of things. And the other thing that I really worry a lot about now is that AI has made it easy for bad actors to create fraudulent things that look very realistic and look very, you know, they can have the air of legitimacy because they're created by AI. And so people need to be very careful because there are a lot of bad actors using AI to do bad things.
So, what are the biggest challenges you have faced when coordinating with international entities and markets, and how have you navigated that?
Yeah, well, I think we work a lot with international regulators for obvious reasons because our markets are interlinked, and we, especially in the United States, have markets where a lot of people from all over the world want to come and invest, and they want to come here to raise capital. But people in the United States also want to be able to go abroad and buy pieces of companies that are overseas, and so our markets really are international. We have to cooperate. We cooperate bilaterally. We're members of multilateral organizations as well, and they can be opportunities for us to work on a specific issue, to learn together about a specific issue, to learn from one another about how we're confronting a particular issue. And so these discussions can be quite valuable. They can also be opportunities for us to address inconsistencies in our rules where the rules or maybe duplicative rules, right? So where you're subject to rules in two different countries, two different jurisdictions, they might not match up very well together. And so there are different ways that we can address that. Sometimes we try to develop standards at the international level that we'll then go back and take to our own jurisdictions and put into rules in our own jurisdictions. Of course, no international body can tell us in the United States what to do. It still has to go through the democratic process in the US. It still, when it's a rule, has to go through a notice and comment rulemaking process. But we often share common principles, common objectives that we're trying to achieve. The other thing that we can do that's, I think, quite useful is we can have a mutual recognition regime, which we have in certain areas where we say, look, we have a set of rules in the US, but for folks in other countries, they might have a similar rule, but not identical rule. And we're going to say it's fine if they comply with that rule. That's good enough because it has sort of the same objectives as the rule in the US. And that can make it easier for someone to do something cross-border.
And does the US ever have issues with US citizens, let's say insider trading in other countries? Would that be a punishable offense in the US, or is that something that's more concerned in Europe per se?
Well, so what we often see is we often see foreign market participants engaging in insider trading in U.S. markets, and that is certainly a concern to us. And it's something that we, if the activity is in the United States, we can bring an enforcement action in that instance. Now, a US citizen is engaging in insider trading in a company that's outside of the United States, that might be something that the foreign regulator has to deal with. But we definitely see lots of cross-border enforcement actions. And so I'm glad you brought that up because we also have cooperation agreements where we will work with our fellow regulators to help them with their cases, and they help us with our cases when it involves, you know,
Right.
people in different countries.
And what would you say has been your most interesting, most challenging situation to deal with in your role at the SEC? What's been your career-changing moment that you said, wow, I love this, and this is very interesting to me?
I mean, I love many aspects of the job. I think one of the challenges has been now that we are taking a more productive approach toward regulating crypto in the United States, trying to figure out how to do that well and to do that effectively, I think has been a challenge. It touches on lots of different areas of the law, and so it's a good sort of capstone project for a commissioner to work on.
Of course. And what kinds of questions are you asking and other regulators too globally about how to understand crypto markets and what are you all looking to discover and achieve with crypto?
Well, I think what we're trying to figure out is where does crypto fit in the existing regulatory landscape? What will it do as a financial regulator? One of the areas I'm looking at, of course, is how will it transform our traditional financial markets? Is this technology going to change the way markets operate? And if so, what do we need to do to facilitate that? Not, you know, it's not our decision because, again, we're just the regulator. So it's not our decision what technology market participants use, but we want to make sure that the rules aren't standing in the way of market participants adopting a technology that they think would be valuable and would make markets more efficient, would make them be able to serve investors and companies trying to raise capital better. And so it's really trying to get the balance right of making sure that the rules apply to activity that they should apply to, but also making sure that they're open enough and flexible enough that people can try new things.
How is the SEC learning to understand these new asset classes at the rate that it's speeding up?
I think it is our job to figure out, as I said, where they fit in the regulatory framework. And if there is no regulatory framework that applies to these assets, then it's our job to say to Congress, there isn't a regulatory framework. Now, Congress may decide that there doesn't need to be because we don't have to regulate every type of asset. We don't have to regulate every type of activity. So then once we've said, okay, these things are within our jurisdiction, then we want to create principles-based rules so that we don't have to rewrite the rules every time we see something new in the markets. Because if you have to do that, there's no way we can keep up. As you said, things are happening so fast. So if we have rules that are open-ended enough that they can cover the changes that are happening, that's really the best way to go. It can be quite tempting for us as regulators to write rules that fit the technology or the assets of the day, but that are really not going to work 10 years from now, let alone 100 years from now.
So you mentioned that you often work with Congress. How has that experience been in terms of cooperation and considering that Congress does consist of both Democrats and Republicans who have widely different views on money and markets and regulation? So how has that worked out for you in terms of how easy it is to collaborate and how have the class tensions either slowed down or made the process challenging?
Well, so I had the opportunity to work for the Senate, so I have a very strong respect for what Congress does, and they write the laws, and so we have to answer to them. So it you know, they're the ones who are telling us what we do through the statutes they write. And so We do try to provide them technical assistance because we do regulate in this area. So we provide them technical assistance as they work on legislation. And so that has been the case with crypto that we've been able to work with them. And in terms of the question around, different approaches, right, that different members of Congress might have, that's what makes this country, right? We have
Of course.
lots of different people who come to things from different perspectives, and I think that helps us to get to a better place. And so I really take that as being part of the way that we can really figure out what regulatory regime the American people wants, because ultimately we serve the American people, and what we do here at the SEC has to be a reflection of what they actually want.
Yeah. Have you ever found that particular laws or bills that you've had to abide by often became either politicized in a way and that you felt that your own personal views have conflicted with the laws that you were supposed to abide by?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. As a regulator, I'm trying to enforce the laws as they're written, and in a way that's consistent with the Constitution, of course. And so, as one example, I had been, before I became an SEC commissioner, quite critical of Dodd-Frank, which was a big financial statute that went into place after the financial crisis. And so it was covered lots of areas, and I've been quite critical of sort of many of the elements in that. But once I get to the SEC as a or got to the SEC as a commissioner, my job is to implement the rules that Congress told us to implement. And so I worked on things that, I might not necessarily have thought was the best approach, but it is my job to do what Congress told me to do. And so I think that is the role that I've taken on as a regulator, is to follow the directives. And so in general, I think the markets that I regulate, so the capital markets, place where people go to invest, but also people go to fund projects and companies, they're markets that all of us in the United States care about. They serve all of us. And so they really, at the end of the day, it shouldn't be political. This is not the markets we regulate are good for all of us. And so if we can come to that, to the re job of regulating them with the idea that we're really just trying to pay for the growth, and the building up of the American economy, I hope that we can all agree that that's a good thing, and that we can do that, link arms together, and walk down the road of regulating them without being too distracted by the politics.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I completely agree with you. The reason I asked that question was just because I think there are a lot of class tensions right now in the United States. And I think there are a lot of things going on in the US that are politicized when they shouldn't be. So I think that very circumstance, in fact, is the reason why I asked that, because I agree with you. It shouldn't be. This is something that we're all supposed to adhere to and admire about the United States. It's something that serves all of us, as you said. We're a capitalist country, and I think that it shouldn't be politicized, and I agree with you. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the importance of what you're asking, I just really want to underscore that, because sometimes we think about these things in ways that are very divorced from the reality of what we're living. But the capital markets, where you're giving people the opportunity to invest in the talent of other people, that's really wonderful. So in this country, you don't actually have to be wealthy in order to build a company, because if you have a good idea, you can go to strangers and they will invest in your company, and they'll let you build your company, hire people, serve your community, and that's all the way that that everyone's lives can be improved. And so the goal really is to figure out what do people want and need, to build products and services that meet those wants and needs, and you can go to the capital markets to get funded to do that.
Right. I cannot agree more. I think that so many people right now are trying to undermine the idea of the American dream and that it isn't working. But to be completely honest, I think the people that are saying that aren't taking advantage of what the American dream is meant for, actually. And I mean, I think it's a shame that, I mean, no judgment, but I think a lot of people don't actually recognize what it's here for and how we're able to take advantage of that. So, yeah, I completely agree with you. So, thank
Yeah,
you.
and I mean, I hope that one thing that I have really wanted us as the SEC to do better is to really encourage more people to participate in the capital markets as investors. Come, you know, come and invest some money. You can then be able to sort of make a down payment for your house later. You can pay for your kids' education. But also, if you have a great idea of a company you want to build, come to the capital markets to get that funded. And so view it as a resource that is available to you and to all of your friends, to your whole community. It's for everyone.
Right.
And that is a piece of making the American dream a reality. It is that, you know, we want to get everyone engaged, and this is really meant to be for everyone.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think a lot of the time, people, and there's no doubt that certain groups might have an edge. Some groups might have an advantage over others in terms of starting a business and having the resources. But I think anyone who really wants to succeed in this country can. And I think people do have a hard time truly understanding that. And I think, again, that's why I'm here. That's why I want to talk about this stuff, because I think so many people should know what they're capable of and what they can do if they really try. So that
And I
actually leads
think
into
what
my
a
next.
lot of people don't realize is that in a lot of other countries, it's much more difficult if you don't know someone
Yeah.
who has power and influence to actually build a company or to, you know, get funding for something. It's actually a lot harder in other places. And so we're constantly at the SEC trying to think about how can we make this more accessible to more people. You know, we, for example, crowdfunding, this is something that Congress put in place, right? They put this crowdfunding regime in place. It's meant to give people easier access to funding and also give people the ability to invest in some of these small companies, new companies. And we're looking for other ways to make it easier for the smallest companies to raise money. And we're looking at ways to democratize so that people who have a, right now there's some rules in place that actually do make it hard for people who don't have a certain amount of wealth or income to invest in private markets. And that's something where I hear a lot of complaints about that, and I agree. It, you know, people should have the freedom to invest in the markets that they want to invest in, and the government shouldn't be the one standing in the way. So we're always trying to improve on that score, but it really is a place where the capital markets really are essential to making this a place where people can participate and they can benefit themselves in ways that's hard, that are, is harder elsewhere.
Yeah, thank you. And that actually does happen to lead into my next question. So, what skills or areas of study in particular do you think are most valuable for students interested in finance or regulation or starting a business or any of those sectors?
Well, I mean,
And
I
then
think
really a background.
economics is a great background to do a lot of different things. I would urge people to do not what I did, which is to embrace math. I think it's really helpful to have a math, you know, a solid math background, especially if you're going to go into finance. That's very important. And then if you want to be a regulator, you know, studying law is helpful and really getting a grounding in the basics of law is important. And then if you have a sort of science technology background combined with a law degree, that is really helpful for understanding how to regulate in this area where technology is now, at the forefront.
Thank you. And looking ahead, what mindset do you think will be most important for new institutions and individuals navigating this new world of AI and the new world of financial markets? So, what qualities, what skills, from what more personality standpoint, should we learn to adopt and apply to our careers?
I mean, my lesson or my advice on that really is just have an open mind and be intellectually curious. And that is something that I fear sometimes when we go into our own corners and we only want to hear from people that think exactly the same way we do. We really lose out on having new ideas come in and stimulate our own thinking. And so be intellectually curious. Read books, talk to people, listen to podcasts, even of people who come to issues from totally different perspectives than you do.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that insight and everything you've provided for our viewers in the interview today. I really appreciate you taking the time to meet with me. And again, I apologize for the inconvenience with my drill, but thank you so much for being
Well,
here.
thanks, Yael. I really enjoyed the conversation.